Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Click of Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade sales. That includes both trades, hardcovers, all sorts of collected editions from, through Diamond to retailers for March 2010. Joining me as always for these episodes is Chris Marshall. How you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, always good to have you on. A couple of things were kind of interesting this month. We were just talking about one of them. Before we started recording here. Now, often DC has you know, the top share on the trade side because they've got a really strong backlist program. This month, Marvel came out on top. Not a big surprise here. What's interesting is the number of items they had. 54 new items. Okay, not too bad. Got a list of 300. 60, that's right, 60 reorder items. For a total of 114 out of the 300 items on the list this month for Marvel. Now, we'll get to what most of those reorders are, and what a quarter of the total units for Marvel on the trade side were in a few minutes, but the total units Marvel had this time were 120,566 estimated units. That accounts for 36.26% of the top 300 unit sales and 43.16% of the dollars for the total unit sales for the top 300. So, really good month for Marvel on the trade side. And, you know, I frankly just stumbled across this shortly before we got on Skype to talk about this. The big thing that happened this month that accounts for that 60 reorder items is it looks like just about every essential under the sun, or at least half of them, got, you know, sales going through the channel this month. And I don't know how they did that, but if we filter the list down to the format of essential, I mean, there's 53 items on the list. Everything from, you know, essential Rampaging Hulk, Ghost Rider, Daredevil, on up and down through X-Men, X-Factor, trying to find an A title for that end of the alphabet, and actually I'm not finding anything. How ironic. But even obscure things like the Essential Godzilla. And now some of these are doing, actually most of these are doing around 500 or 600 units. Essential Ghost Rider Volume 1 as high as 809 units. And then that Essential Rampaging Hulk Volume 2, which I believe is a new trade, that was released at the end of March with 1,716 units. But this really shows how even a couple hundred units can really add up if you have, you know, 50 or some odd items coming out in a given month. Now, I don't know, I mean, how this happened, because it's not like I think there's any kind of a groundswell of people just flocking to the store saying, I must have essential, you know, this, that, or the other. And as we were talking about before we started recording, things like that Godzilla, because of the licensing rights and whatnot, they may not be able to reprint. So that may not be a new printing of that so much as just leftovers from the original.
Right. Well, the weird thing also is the only thing that came out on my list in March was Rampaging Hulk Volume 2. And then if you look at the other ones that, like, that are not reorders, mm-hmm. like Essential Wolverine Volume 3, Peter Parker Volume 2, and Doctor Strange Volume 3, and Spectacular Spider-Man Volume 3, those did not come out. Those came out months ago.
Yeah, I think what happened is my system is picking up, is tagging things as reorder based on having seen All right. them on the top trades list before, or knowing that they shipped before. So for some of these that are older material, I mean, again, it's got Essential Wolverine Volume 4 as reorder, but not Volume 3. Obviously, 3 came out before 4.
Right, right.
But my system doesn't have anything to categorically state that, yes, it knows that. So it didn't tag that as a reorder item.
Right, yeah, this is weird. This is just I don't think we've ever seen something like this before.
I'm almost certain we have. Well, let me put it this way. I know we haven't seen it before. I'm pretty sure it also hasn't happened before.
Right.
Because
right.
This is the kind of thing I would hope we would notice.
Right.
Because, I mean, again, 53 reorder items, you know, again, just a flood of essentials here. And it's so many of these that it almost precludes the possibility of it being new printings of things just because of the crimp that would put in the Marvel cash flow to afford to put all these things back into print.
Mm-hmm.
It almost, to me, reeks of either somebody at Marvel or somebody at Diamond or somebody somewhere went into a corner of the warehouse that just doesn't get much traffic, opened something and said, holy cow, we've got, you know, pallets full of essentials, you know, and I don't know, maybe they offered them at a blowout price or something like that.
But I don't remember any such offer, like, or anything like that. I mean, if they would have found all these essentials, we would have known about it, wouldn't we? I mean,
I'll be honest, I have not been following the back side of the Diamond website closely these days. I just haven't had the time. But I know that there are times where they will do just a doorbuster sale on something they have too many of. Now, I have a hard time picturing them having done that for the what looks to be almost the entire line of essentials here, or at least a huge portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't think of any other explanation for this that would get, you know, 500-plus units of 53 different essentials through the system in March. And think about that. These are only the ones that made the list.
Right.
There are clearly other essentials. I mean, I'm not sure how many different volumes there are in the entire essential line, but I got to imagine there's more than 53. You know, so I think a lot of them, I mean, because I'm not seeing any Avenger titles or anything like that. I've got to imagine there are other essentials that flew through the system in March that just didn't make the cutoff.
Because
the list cuts off a little below 500 this month. It actually cuts off at, let me unfilter the list real quick, at 495 units.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is one of those cases where some of the things that really skew the numbers in terms of, you know, the breakdown of the top 300, and in this case, the actual, you know, overall, you know, share that Marvel had of the market.
Right.
Gets skewed just by what potentially is a one-off event of product that had been presumably lost flying through the system. Now, it does beg the question, were these sold under normal, you know, discount conditions? Was it offered at a higher discount? And, you know, how much did Marvel really make off of this? But regardless, I mean, the numbers that Diamond is releasing are the numbers that Diamond is releasing. So, you know,
so we have to accept it, really, you know?
Unless we can prove it wrong, and there
right.
actually have been one or two cases where, you know, that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
There was one time where the year-end numbers, I shot back and said, hey, wait a sec, this doesn't look right. And then there was another time when John Jackson Miller challenged the January numbers one year and was correct that they weren't right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't happen often, and there's no reason to suggest that's going to happen on this case. But it sure does look interesting just to see that many essentials in any
right.
given month.
And you're right. Not only does that skew Marvel's numbers, but it also skews everybody else's numbers that sold under. I mean, there may be a bunch more items that would have made the list.
Oh, presumably 50 or so, yeah.
50 or so, right, exactly.
And I'm willing to bet if we filter the list by DC and look at what's there and what's not there,
mm-hmm.
you know, do we have all the usual suspects? You know, Fables, Why the Last Man, what are the other ones that usually show up? Because, I mean, there are a lot of things that are just, you know.
Well, just about any Vertigo, you know, the scalp trades or something like that, yeah.
But, I mean, there are a couple where, like, every volume always shows up.
Right.
So, you know, I haven't gone through to see if all of those showed up or not, but presumably those that didn't are just below the radar.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, Watchmen's still on the list, so, you know.
Well, I mean, Final Crisis even made the list, so.
Right.
You know, it came in at rank 224 with 611 estimated units. So, It's the kind of thing that can skew the numbers some.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that in terms of not skewing them incorrectly, but shifting them in a manner that makes them easy for people to misinterpret what they're really seeing. Because I'm willing to bet a lot of people would look at that market share and say, wow, Marvel's really stepped up their game on the trade side. And mm-hmm. arguably they have with the essentials. But again, is that going to be an ongoing thing, or was it a one-off fluke?
Mm-hmm.
And it almost, like I said, has to be a fluke. DC, again, came in with the second highest percentage of the top 300 trades. They had 24.03% by units and 23.43% by dollars. After that came Dark Horse and Image, then Viz, and then Dynamite had a decent month, both on the trade side and on the comic side. And Bob and I were talking about this on the comic episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'm expecting Dynamite to make a play for becoming a premier publisher.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, we saw IDW become one. I would think that Dynamite is next in line.
Well, they sent out a press release this week saying, hey, we came in number 4th on the comics list.
Right.
At the top-selling non-Marvel and DC trade. And, I mean, again, kudos to them. That's this kind of thing. When they hit milestones like that, yes, they really ought to send out those kind of emails and promote themselves. I mean, that's marketing.
Right.
But I kind of take that as writing on the wall that they're potentially getting ready to make a play for that.
But you can't be a one-hit wonder. I mean, you've got to consistently do that month to month to month and really show Diamond and the other publishers that you're in the ballgame, that you can play.
Well, and I think Dynamite's actually doing a pretty good job of that, arguably mm-hmm. better than IDW, and they did better than IDW this time around mm-hmm. with 6 items compared to IDW's 10 items. So, I mean, they did better with fewer things. But you look at how The Boys is usually on the list. They're starting up a very, I'll go with prolific, I was going to go with strong, but we'll go with prolific Green Hornet franchise.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, they're making a big push. They had 3 or 4 titles of Green Hornet. Five or six, jeez.
They got Green Hornet Year One, which I guess is a miniseries, Kato, another Kato One, Green Hornet Strikes, and a Green Hornet Parallel Lives or something in the new previews.
Yeah, and then whenever the movie comes out, they're going to do the adaptation for it, aren't they? The Seth Rogen movie.
I would certainly assume so. Yeah.
Yeah.
But hey, if it works well for them, and that's what got them on the top of the non-Marvel DC Comics sales list this time around, more power to them.
It's going to be interesting also when this summer, when, you know, it's only one title. You know, when we're talking about Green Hornet and Dynamite, and they have one name but 5 titles, but it'll be interesting to see what Image does with the Hackslash series moving over there.
Yeah.
I think that title could really take off. And they're going to re-release everything in their omnibus editions, their Image omnibus editions. And they're going to find new life, I think, with Tim Seeley over there.
I think Image just in general is starting to realize that they've got a couple of titles that have been around long enough mm-hmm. that, you know, again, the number one issues they re-released, that they may really start pushing the collected editions and kind of promote the fact that they've got, you know, again, Spawn and Witchblade, some of these titles that are well past issue 100. In mm-hmm. Spawn's case, what, it's almost at 200, isn't it?
Right, yeah.
And then
Savage there's a
Dragon.
Couple of different Spawn trade paperbacks that have been a bit late, let's just say.
Right, know? Right. But I think they're starting to realize, hopefully at least, that there's a market for their older material and collected edition, and that could also help their current sales as well.
Mm-hmm. And Dark Horse, speaking of older material, not too much older, but older anyway, they're going to re-release the BPRD series in a 4 series of oversized library edition, but softcover omnibus library editions.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Has anyone done softcover omnibus type stuff?
Well, Top Cow has. You know, they do their Witchblade compendiums.
You're right.
And
you're
they
right.
release those in hardcover and softcover.
You're right.
So I think Dark Horse must have looked at that model and said, hey, we can do that. And full color, oversized softcovers. So,
because you're right.
Good idea. But I still like the nice hardcover library editions they do for Hellboy. Those are really nice.
No, I can understand that. But I was tempted by a couple of the things Top Cow's done, like the 50 issues of, what was it, Tomb Raider, all under one cover, you know, soft cover.
Yeah, books. They had those sitting out at C2E2 also. Those are some big, thick books.
Well, and the price point's pretty good on those.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So, I mean, I can see why they do it and why it would work out well for them.
And they sell out. You know, they do those, you know, limited edition printings, and those things take off.
Yeah, yeah. So, top-selling book this time around did 7,251 units.
No surprise. We talked about that last week, or last month.
Yeah, because this is reorder activity, and it was the top of the list last time around, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hey, upcoming movie coming out, you know, what do you expect? So it'll do well, but, you know...
I'm... Kick-Ass. We should say the title, though.
I was going to let you.
Oh.
You know, it's one of those things. I don't like profanity. I don't use profanity.
Oh,
and it's like,
please.
They give
it's all
me
over
a hard...
the TV.
I know. Well, I'm old-fashioned that way. What can I say?
Yeah.
You know, but when it's the title of the book, it's like, well, it's got to stay in. Okay. Doesn't mean I got to say it, but, you know.
Right, right.
I'm curious to see how well the movie will do, how well that'll do for the trade, and in this case, the hardcover, and if this is going to have some longevity or not.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, based solely on the first issue of Nemesis, I think that would make a much better movie and has some long-term potential.
What about The Losers?
You know, I haven't read The Losers, and
okay.
I saw a couple of clips from it on The Daily Show the other night where they had... The lady who played Uhura on the new Star Trek. And they didn't even mention once it was based on a comic book. Not that they have to, but, you know, I was kind of disappointed with that.
Right.
Looked like it could be good.
Yeah. Well, just for comparison, I know it's a reorder activity, but the double volume of The Losers coming at number 201 this month with 638 units. So, again, reorder, but it's still doing pretty respectable.
Yeah, but, I mean, this top item here was also reordered with 7,251 units, so...
That's true. That's true.
It says something, though, that you can get reorder activity that's not much lower than the initial order activity, you know, the following month, and still top the list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've actually had this once on the comic side where reorders for a particular issue... topped the list the issue after, or the month after the issue came out, and that was, of course, the Obama Spider-Man about a year ago.
Right.
But I think it also says something about the relatively weak sales on the trade side, not that, you know, over 7,000 units is bad. But really, once we go below the top four items, we're below 4,000 units. Because in rank two, we've got Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8, Volume 6 trade paperback, with 7,029 units. Rank number three is Boys Volume 6 trade paperback with 6,640 units. And then rank four is Hellboy Volume 9 trade paperback with 5,701 estimated units. Now, all of those are decent numbers, and I don't think any of those are a surprise. Buffy is a strong seller. I'm sure it's doing very well in the mass market as well. The Boys has been a very, very strong property for Dynamite, and this is one of the reasons I think it's not just the Green Hornet that's going to get them to potentially premier status, but they've got a good lineup of titles, you know, and The Boys is one of their keystone titles there. But then also, you know, Hellboy, a strong property for Dark Horse. But nothing else cracked 4,000 units, and I certainly don't expect everything else to do that, but it just seems like we very quickly get into the point where maybe your on average a store is ordering a copy. But, I mean, we go below 3,000 units by the time we hit rank 13. Now, to put some of this into perspective, under 4,000 units by rank 5, that item right there is the $10 or $9.99, actually, promotionally priced Haunt number Volume 1. With 3,895 units. Now, that's not a bad start for the trade, but I went ahead and looked up the sales on the monthly side for that. First issue did over 50,000 units, 50,036 to be exact, or to be an exact estimate, I should say, because, again, we're dealing with estimates, yada, yada. Standard disclaimers apply. Haunt number two went down to 28,245 units. 3 bumped up just a little bit with 28,388. 4 went to 26,421. 5 dropped to 22,454. And then 6 with 20,489. Now, how many issues are in this first trade? Is it, it's the first story arc. I don't know if the first story arc lasted 4 issues, 5 issues, or 6 issues.
You know, off the top of my head, I don't know.
It's the kind of thing I wish they'd put in the solicit.
Ugh.
Be nice. But, you know, it's one of those things, though, that you look at the sales between the first and the sixth issue, you know, dropping to two-fifths of what it was.
Right.
3,895 units on the trade, that's not too bad. It's not great. Not enough necessarily to keep the title around, but again, with 20,000 plus units for an Image title, I don't think they need to worry about that either.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that was a fairly high-profile Image book, and it couldn't even crack 4,000 units in the first month of release. Now, it was scheduled to ship on the first week of March. It came out on the 24th. Had it come out on the first week, it would have had 5 weeks of sales and reorder activity to factor in. As it was, it only had 2 weeks. And I'd be a little surprised if it got much reorder activity on that that final week of the month.
It was a 5-issue series. Or 5 issues. In the
5-issue story arc?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we do the math real quick. That's let me pull up a calculator so I do the math right. It's been one of those nights, you know.
Did you buy this title?
I bought the first issue. I thought it was uninspired.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I like some of what Kirkman does, but it's not that he's become a one-trick pony. It's that his new ideas both in, I mean, this series struck me as a bad combination of Spawn and Spider-Man and Venom.
Mm-hmm.
And in all the wrong ways. You know, his stuff on the pilot season stuff this time around has been mediocre to passable at best.
Mm-hmm.
He's capable of better, and I'd like to see better out of him. But on average, those 5 issues of Haunt did 31,100 and, we'll say, 9 units. So this did a little better than about 10%, 15% of that. So, to me, that's kind of in line with expectations. You know, normally I would kind of take the trades, expect them to be about a tenth of the sales for the monthly issues. But if that can't crack 4,000 or whatever, few things can, I think. Another, I think, highly anticipated release was at rank 8 with the fourth volume of the Planetary hardcover, which did 3,699 units. Now, that's up over 25% from the third volume of the hardcover for Planetary. But, again, on average, we're talking most stores getting a copy. You know, once you drop below rank to rank 13, you get below 3,000. Once you get down to rank 31, you're below 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what we're really seeing is further proof that, you know, a lot of people are waiting for the trade, and that's very aptly put, because they're still waiting. They're not buying.
I think also, not only are they waiting for the trade, but possibly they're buying less trades, and they're being much more choosy on what they want to read, and not buying 10 trades at a time each month or something like that, and they're only buying the 2 or 3 probably that are recommended to them, or, you know, one that they want and a few others that are recommended to them.
Well,
and being careful with their money.
No, totally, totally. And I would expect that they're waiting until they finished what they read before buying more.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in a healthier economy, it's probably much more likely that people are, you know, I don't say overbuying, but buying more than they have the time to read at the moment.
Right.
And that just makes sense, you know. But, I mean, the economy, I think, is doing a little bit better, at least no worse than it was, you know, a year ago. And, you know, I don't know if we're kind of hitting an equilibrium or what, but it's a combination of people being tighter with their money, too much stuff coming out, and really not everything needs to get collected into a trade paperback, a hardcover, or a premier hardcover, or an omnibus, or what have you. So I think, you know, sooner or later, in addition to the retailers getting more selective about what they buy, we might actually start seeing the publishers get more selective about what they collect.
Well, that's my point. I was going to bring up, you know, with titles like, what is it, the 10 or the Great 10?
Yes, Bob was telling me about the Great 10 becoming the Great 9, essentially.
It is the Great 9, and looks the web and a few other titles. What if DC decides not to collect those and say, hey, look, if you wanted them, you should have bought them. And 9 issues is all we're giving you, and have fun going back issue hunting, because that's where it is.
Well, Bob and I talked about this some, particularly with the Great 10. And, I mean, the sales of that were down at, let me go pull this up so I get it right. It was around.
And DC has no obligation to put those in trade, by the way.
Oh, totally, totally.
That's my point. That's what I'm kind of getting at.
But the Great 10 number 5 sold 6,555 units.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that first issue sold 13,155 units. When we started talking about the numbers way back, a couple of years back, this would have been starting below cancellation level.
Right.
So Tony Bedard had probably a little bit of an inkling that, you know, maybe this won't go 10 issues. And when I saw it was solicited for 10, I'm like, really? That seems ambitious. Turns out I was right. I hate that. I'd rather be wrong. But, you know, if it's gone from 13,155 down to 6,555 units in 5 issues, continue that trend, they're going to be, you know, losing a lot more readers by that 9th issue, probably not making any money, but they would apparently they decided it was worse, it was a better move to have the loss of face by cutting the series short than to lose the money on the issue.
Right.
Which I find surprising. And I would have, if had I been in their shoes and been able to take the financial loss, I'd have taken it.
Because mm-hmm.
then you could at least say you got the 10 issues out, and you said it'd be 10 issues. It was 10 issues. Now, are they under any obligation to collect this? Absolutely not. Should they collect it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that only in so much as they should solicit the collection, see how it does. If it doesn't get enough orders, cancel it. No harm, no foul. Well, I'm not going to say no harm, no foul, because technically it's a really crummy way to do business, and as a reader I find it a horrible thing to do.
Right.
But they've done that before with the Atomic Knight showcase, the Great Disaster showcase.
Well, there are some legal problems with that too, as far as royalty money and everything.
True, but I think that, I mean, we've seen other publishers put stuff out there, realize they're going to lose their shirt on it, and just not come out with it. You know, there's nothing to say DC can't solicit it and see how it would do. Mm-hmm. Now, would it get enough orders to be worth printing? Probably not. Flip side, though, if you've got all this material in a digital format, and we've talked about this before, it costs you the time of an intern in your production staff, or maybe a highly paid production staff member. I honestly don't know how much skill it would take.
Mm-hmm.
But to take the stuff you've put together for the 9 issues, string them together, put a new trade dress on it, put a price and a barcode on it, boom, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not paying for any additional content, really, just the repackaging of it, which I've got to imagine is a manageable cost.
Mm-hmm.
And if it allows you to double dip, maybe you're going to make some money back that you lost on that 9th issue, or 8th issue, or 7th issue, or however many they lose money on. And I've got to imagine they're losing money. Why else pull the plug?
Well, on the flip side of that, or you know, you wonder what Marvel is doing when they decided to give Agents of Atlas an ongoing series. Because that went up to, like, what, 9, 10 issues? And they didn't pull the plug, per se, but they said, hey, we are now going to change it, and it's going to be Agents of Atlas versus X-Men, and then versus the Avengers, and then the Bob Grayson miniseries, and now the Namora one-shot with the Women of Marvel, and now they're going into the Agents, or the Atlas series,
the Atlas
as it is.
Yeah.
And I'm, as a guy who, I like that series, and I'm getting it in trade, I'm just damn confused as far as which title goes where as far as continuity goes, and which one's Dark Reign, which one is Siege, and you know who's fighting who and everything. And I wish they would just, but if you read them all together, John, it's like Agents of Atlas continuing the numbering, but it's just not the numbering and it's not the title of the series. But they're all the Agents of Atlas stories.
Right, but by doing that, it allowed them to reposition the title, get some new number ones that people right. might find easier to jump on to, attract readers of the Avengers, of the X-Men, you know, of more Golden Age type stuff that might have hopped on the Marvel Boy, the Uranus or whatever, Uranian miniseries. So I can see why they were trying to do that, because they've got a property they have faith in, and I think justifiably so. It's a good property.
But then, but what I'm getting at is, if you have me, you got me at number one, right? And you got me with the first miniseries a few years ago, right? But then if you got me, and I've got it on my pull list, and I, you know, I'm getting confused, because then I have to double check my pull list and say, okay, where are the Agents going this month?
This
and
goes,
what title is it?
This goes back to my theory of transient sales.
Yeah.
And how certainly when I started reading comics, it was a huge, huge big deal for there to be a new number one, even for a mini-series. I mean, I remember when Superman presents the Krypton Chronicles. Ooh, it's a mini-series. And they have to explain the concept of a mini-series. It's only going to be 3 issues. You know, don't get too invested. It's going to go away. Or when they did the first maxi-series of Camelot 3000.
Right.
Or when they flipped Brave and the Bold into Batman and the Outsiders. It was the first new, you know, number one for a Batman title in decades. And at that point in time, people collected titles. You got on to Brave and the Bold, and yeah, you might drop it, you might pick it up later, whatever. But by and large, you wrote it. You wrote it out. You know, you just went with it. These days, because titles flip over, they reboot, they relaunch, they renumber, they retitle, they whatever, you know, Agents of Atlas is a good example. If you like Agents of Atlas, boom, it ended. Oh, wait, okay. Now I, as a reader, have to make the conscious decision to remember to either tell my retailer, pre-order, or whatever, this new title of X-Men versus, or, you know, Avengers versus, or whatever it was actually called. You know, and it requires a bit more thought, and it gets people out of the habitual buying habit. And for a couple of things, Iron Fist. Loved that title. Enjoying it. They switched creative teams. Smooth transition. Still loved it. Oh, then they take it to put it on quote-unquote hiatus for the Immortal Weapons. Okay, right. I'll make that switch. I go with the Immortal Weapons. 5 issues ends, and now what? There's nothing for me to go get.
They've Boom lost. Goes the dynamite. It's over.
Yeah, I mean, they've lost my sale there. So now, both the retailer, the creators, the publisher, everybody has to sell me on something new. Now, in some cases, it's a pretty easy transition. Again, Immortal Iron Fist to Immortal Weapons, Blackest Night to Brightest Day, those sorts of things make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But there comes a point where they switch the titles, they bounce it around, they do too many one-shots and miniseries, where they're really reinforcing the transient nature of sales.
Well, and I hope that, just looking on the list, I hope that that doesn't happen with Marvel Cosmic, but I fear that is where it's headed right now. With, you know, we had the Great Annihilation that spawned Nova and Guardians of the Galaxy, and now they're kind of wrapping it all back into War of Kings, and now there's a Realm of Kings, and boy, you just wonder if there's too much of a good thing going on right now with Marvel Cosmic, and it all might explode.
But by putting Nova and Guardians of the Galaxy, either ending them or putting them on hiatus, whichever it is,
mm-hmm.
they lose my habitual buying of Nova and Guardians of the Galaxy every month.
Right.
Maybe when they start back up, I'll get back on. Maybe I won't. Now, realistically, I will, but I'm atypical, and we know this.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that these publishers are not taking advantage of the addictive habitual nature of comics, and you know they're paying the price for that, and that's something that I think would come in to play big time if we were to ever get to the point where trades took over as the primary revenue source versus comics.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause right now comics are pretty much the bread and butter, and trades are just a way to double dip and get a little extra. But if that were to ever change and the trades were the big thing, it would fundamentally change comics because you get out of that never-ending saga. Granted, I think we've kind of gone away from that anyways. And you get more into the six-issue trade paperback-sized story arcs.
Well, I think you're seeing that with Vertigo Crime. I think they're trying that.
Well, I think
the mainstream publishers
are.
Yeah, and I've said it before. You know, we always compare Marvel and DC and the Masterworks to the archives and whatnot. But you look at Vertigo Crime and you're like, boy, you know, Marvel could be doing this with Marvel Noir instead of doing the 4-issue Spider-Man. Just release it as Marvel Noir Spider-Man and just the trade paperback and compete and see what sticks to the wall. And, you know, instead of bringing it out as a 4-issue series in the trade paperback, just bring it out 128 pages, $17.99, and see what sticks.
Bob and I were just talking about that on the comics episode this month, specifically with Prelude to Deadpool Core.
Yeah.
5 issues, all done in 1 month.
Yeah.
Why not just go straight to trade? And I'll tell you the same thing I told him. You know, on the one hand, that makes sense. I considered that way back when they did the World War III as part of 52, where all 4 issues came out on the same day.
I remember that.
And there was a drop-off in sales. Now, talk about fickle readers. I mean, do we really think people are going to get so bored with the series just in the time they're waiting to check out mm-hmm. that they're going to say, oh, I'm not going to get the 4th issue? No, of course not. But there are going to be some who say, let me get the 1st, come back, whatever. But by coming out with 4 individual issues, it then gave them the ability to come out with that as a trade paperback down the line and double dip.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't a publisher do that? It works.
Mm-hmm.
Should it work? Gosh, I really wish it didn't, but actually that's not true. I'm glad it does. And the reason I'm glad it does is I look at these sales where only a handful of titles sold, you know, above 3,000 or 4,000 units, you know, on the trade side. Sales are not a whole lot stronger on the monthly comic side. If they need to make their money by repackaging their stuff 6 ways to Sunday, okay. You know, I don't like it, but I accept it. You know, they got to make their money somehow, and it's certainly not by expanding the audience and keeping readers hooked.
You know, you look at Marvel, they bring out everything, you know, double the amount of product every month. And just look at the solicitations that came out 2 weeks ago, and you can see that for the July solicits. But
yeah.
I think, you know, as little as DC is putting out in collected edition these days, I think they're being more innovative and, you know, doing the Vertigo Crime stuff and doing the classic series and not bombarding us with runaways trade paperbacks every month. You know what I mean?
I agree with that, and I would like to see them find some innovative way to take the material from, say, the 80s and start repackaging that and getting that out.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing some of this with some of the Giffen DeMatteis Justice League and whatnot. But imagine if they were to make a concerted effort to say, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths drew a line in the sand and we kind of rebooted the continuity going forward. Let's start doing trades of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Superman Man of Steel. And we're going to follow it up with the collections of the various stories and stuff that happened in the Superman titles thereafter. To where you could be following a reality back, I guess would be the way to phrase it,
mm-hmm.
the unfolding of the DC Universe.
Right.
Wouldn't that be kind of cool?
Hey, I'm still waiting for my big old thick trade paperback of all the Crisis on Infinite Earth tie-in titles. They have never been released.
I'm wondering if once they get another volume or two on the Crisis on Multiple Earths, because
mm-hmm.
they're...
Well, Volume 5 just came out.
Yeah, I just got that in my shipment today. But
yeah.
Really, I think they have enough for a 6, a 7, maybe an 8, but I don't
yeah.
think so. At which point, that puts them with Crisis on Infinite Earths anyways.
Right.
So what are they going to do then?
Well, like I would love to see a couple trade paperbacks of the tie-in books. You're seeing that on the Marvel side with the Secret Wars 2 Omnibus. You know, say what you will about it, but all that got released. They're doing the Acts of Vengeance omnibus. They're doing the Inferno tie-in omnibus.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, hate it or not, it's good to see coming out. Because a lot of that stuff has never been released.
Well, and again, I think there's a dead zone of material that has not been reprinted. between late 70s, mid 90s.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things in there, certainly, that have been collected. I'm not saying none of it has, but there's a lot of it that, aside from some essentials and some showcases, you just can't find. I mean, have they done a collection of the Ted Kord Blue Beetle series?
I don't think so. And I also would like to see, speaking of that era, I would like to see all those Justice Society of America run back then. Or, you know what, even the run of the Spectre. Wouldn't that be cool to have?
Or the All-Star Squadron, Infinity
Inc. Yeah, also, that's what I'm talking about. The All-Star Squadron, the JSA back then. You know, all that stuff would be great to see.
And they've got a lot of stuff like that they could do, and they could pair it up with titles that are coming out now.
Mm-hmm. They sure could.
And, you know, Infinity Inc. would be an interesting thing to kind of, you know, have as a counterpoint to JSA All-Stars.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just not thinking that way. Likewise, if they'd been collecting the original Warlord series, that might have helped the sales of the new Warlord comic that's ending.
There's another one that's going. How many issues did that last?
16.
16, okay.
Which is not bad these days.
Mm-hmm.
But that in of itself says something. I mean, so many titles rarely make it to a 24th or 25th issue.
Right.
And it used to be, no matter how uninspired the series might have been, that was guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it would take it that long to drift down to low sales.
What's Secret Six at, about 16, 17 right now?
Let's go take a look at that.
Because that's a pretty good comparison.
Although a lot of people love that series.
I like that series. I really like that series.
I like it. I don't love it. And there are some people that are just gaga over it. It's at issue 19,
okay,
which did 23,181 units. So, I mean, it's doing all right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've got a lot of titles on the monthly side that are at that questionable sales level. And, you know, I'm not seeing anything here on the trade side to counterbalance that.
What's the questionable sales level for a comic in your mind?
Well, it used to be 20,000 when we started, because at that point, that's when titles would start to go away. Now we're seeing titles under 6,000 that they're then announcing the cancellation of.
Okay.
So, I mean, really, and I was saying this to Bob, it's not a matter of the business having gotten that much more efficient and, you know, penny-pinching or anything of the sort. I think it's more a matter of, if they cancel everything at what used to be cancellation levels, they'd be printing nothing.
Well, Warlord came in at 8,430. Marvel Boy came in at 8,817. You know, so,
Now, think about that. Let's assume 3,000 comic shops.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a questionable figure, and I'll grant that. That's what? 2-3 copies per store on average?
Yeah.
So anyone who's listening to this who's been in a store that had more than 3 copies, you know, heaven forbid if they had 5, 6, or 10, that meant some of the store probably didn't have any.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the stores here in town was telling me they don't order particular books from Marvel because they do not sell. And my response was, well, if they don't sell, yeah, don't order them.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad business. But if you don't order them, you don't have them on the shelf, they can't sell. And I'm not seeing, I mean, to me, that's where the system is broken down.
Mm-hmm.
Because who's marketing, who's promoting these trades, these comics, this material? Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, like I was saying, I caught a promo for the Losers movie on The Daily Show. Mm-hmm. Zero mention it was based on a comic book. And I'm under the impression Jon Stewart's a comic book fan.
Right.
He'd have been happy to mention that.
Well, Colbert is. We know that.
Yeah. So, you know, again, they're promoting the movie, not the comic, whatever. I get that.
Right.
But we're not going to see any bump in sales on comics for most of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll see some temporary ones, particularly in the case where you've got a particular trade that equates to the movie, and it's like, oh, you know, here's what it was based on. I mean, again, Watchmen, those sorts of things, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
But Iron Man.
but actually, I was going to use that as a counterpoint.
Yeah.
Because with Iron Man, there's no one trade that's the logical go to this after seeing the movie.
Right.
So the influence of the movie is spread across the bazillion Iron Man trades that are out there.
Right. At least with Kick-Ass or The Losers, you can go to that one trade.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, again, same with Watchmen, Sin City, 300. And there have been a few others where we've seen some noticeable bumps from the movies.
Well, it's like when Jonah Hex comes out, what would you grab? The showcase. That's about it. You know, I mean, sure, you can go grab the trade paperback of the new stuff, yeah, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's your really only option, the new series starting at number one or the showcase, the black and white showcase. And we know that there's a ton of Jonah Hex out there that has not been collected.
Yeah, yeah.
Get the Space Cowboy Jonah Hex out there.
Hex, all 18 issues? Oh, yeah.
I'll take that.
Actually, I like that series.
I would like to read that.
But that's one of those that fell in, that's in the middle of that dead zone. That again, mm-hmm. if they had said from Crisis forward, let's start doing trades, Hex would have come out with a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And if they did this as some kind of a time travel-ish marketing shtick, you know, this is your father's DC universe or what have you. Would it sell gangbusters? Maybe not, but be kind of cool. Be a little harder for Marvel to pull off this kind of a thing, because I don't think there's a good jumping in point.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe after Secret Wars, but even that would be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah.
But, I mean, we're seeing that, you know, people are always saying, oh, well, you know, it's not doing too well in the monthly, but it'll make up for it in trade. Then they see these numbers and say, well, it must be doing better in the mass market, and frankly, it's not. So, you know, what's going to happen?
You know, this may sound like a stretch, but I think the best jumping on point in all the eras, looking back, was right after Heroes were born. You had the number ones of Thor, Avengers, Fantastic Four, Iron Man.
I would agree with that. That's
all right there. And that's moved into what everything that has taken place over the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, really. And it was also really strong material.
Oh, it was very good material. Yeah.
And Busick and Perez on Avengers, you can't get much better than that.
Well, no, but you remember they did that. They were on Avengers, and after like 12 issues concurrently with the new Avengers series, they did Avengers Forever. And it was like, that was
Pacheco
really cool.
Pacheco was the artist on that.
Only did you have the current Avengers, but Avengers Forever looked everything that went on in the past. And all the time travel stuff there and everything. That was really, really cool stuff.
And that's when they spun up the Thunderbolts originally.
Exactly. Yeah, look at that. Still going on these days.
So, I mean, that would be an excellent thing for Marvel to do is say, okay, we're drawing a line in the sand here. We're going to start a run of trades. We're going to come out with one every week. We'll let you just start reliving the past of the Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that sets the stage for what's going on now.
Well, you bring up a good point. They did just reissue the Kevin Smith Daredevil number one.
Yeah, but imagine if you had a concerted effort to do a organized-ish timeline of trades to kind of get you into what matters of the Marvel or DC universe mm-hmm. from a point in time. You know, it'd be a different kind of approach, but similar sort of to what CrossGen did with their Edge and Forge trades.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those were more of a sampling kind of a thing, but I do think that Marvel and DC can and should be doing something that's just kind of a, I don't want to say a Cliff Notes thing, but something that's not just a, here's six issues of a title, here you go, but something to give a cohesive, you know, get you hooked in the Marvel and DC universe stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they try to do that with their one-shot comic books that they always give away for free. They've been, like, the chronology comic books.
The saga stuff, but that's more
of a
History Channel biography kind of a thing, not a Lost or, I'm trying to think of another kind of, a 24 kind of a
right.
suck you in kind of a thing.
And just because they mention it in the Marvel Chronology free comic book doesn't mean they're available. A lot of those books may be sold out.
Yeah, there is that.
You know?
But, I mean, for the longest time, I was thinking that the shift in the market that was going to happen next was going to be away from monthly comics to the collected edition.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were seeing the sales continue to drop on the monthly side, which we still are, even to levels that I find staggering. But what we're not continuing to see is an increase on the trade side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're seeing some drops there. We're seeing some low activity there. So I'm starting to wonder, I mean, there's a lot of talk lately about digital. I mean, you've got your new podcast about digital comics and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
that's got the potential of opening comics up to a whole new audience and becoming effectively the modern equivalent to the spinner rack that a lot of us got into comics on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I would go to the grocery store with my mom, and when I was a kid, she'd go get the groceries, I'd go hang out at the spinner rack, I'd go read, you know, New Teen Titans, Legion of Superheroes, All-Star Squadron. You know, that's what got me hooked on the DC Universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that just doesn't happen these days. But if kids through their iPad or through their computer or through something could be reading digital versions of stuff and get them hooked, we need new readers.
Right.
So, quick look at the price points on stuff. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the $14.99 and $16.99 price points, very big this month, might have a lot to do with all those essentials we talked about. I mean, there were 59 things at the $16.99 price point, 37 things at the $14.99 price point. I mean, that's almost a third of the list right there. We had quite a few things at the $9.99 price point. We had 26 items there, 36 at the $19.99 price point, 35 at the $24.99 price point, and another 18 at the $12.99. That takes us to well over two-thirds of the list right there. So, you know, a couple of price points are winning out. But again, this month I think we had some major anomalies just with all those essentials coming up.
Right.
I mean, that was just staggering. But all in all, not a bad month. You know, total sales were, they were all right. Let me go do a quick comparison for how they were compared to previous months. And see, on average, for the new order or the final order era, in other words, from February 2003 forward, when Diamond first started releasing sales in terms of what actually shipped to stores versus what they ordered, the average is a little over 250,000 units. Keep in mind that's an average over that whole time, even though the list went to only 100 about a year or so back, and then 50 prior to that, and originally was only 10 items deep. Over the last year, the average has been closer to 332,441 units, which is almost exactly what we had this time around for the total estimated units, where we had 332,538 units. So under 100 unit difference between this month and the average.
Mm-hmm.
So again, fairly average month. You got anything
what
else?
I was going to ask you, what did you enjoy this past month in the month of March
that
you bought?
That I bought, I got to say Blackest Night.
Yeah.
Blackest Night just rocked. I was really, really pleased with how it ended. Really liked how Brightest Day started up. I think we've had a couple of really good comics last month or so. We've also had a couple that were really bad. One that I thought was particularly bad was the Doc Savage Bob and I talked about this week. One that I thought recently was a real surprise in terms of really good was the Cloak and Dagger one-shot Marvel did.
Really?
It was probably the strongest characterization for Dagger I've ever read, and I've read almost all of her appearances. It was really well done. They decided to take those characters in a direction away from the X-Men, which makes sense. They're not mutants, nor should they be. But was unfortunate because I thought they were fitting in really well.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the strength of that one shot, I'd like to see more Cloak and Dagger.
Okay.
So, how about you? What have you been reading?
Well, I got to make a push for Mysterious, the Unfathomable from Tom Fowler.
Okay.
And I met Tom at C2E2, and I got a chance to pick up a trade paperback and. The reviews are right. It was a fantastic read. It was really cool to not only hang out and even have breakfast with him and talk about his book, but just really neat book overall. And that book actually came in at a pretty good showing at rank 69, with 1,286 units.
I have not read Mysterious the Unfathomable. I've heard great things about it.
So I really recommend it. So very cool stuff. Very, very, how can I put it? Well, you know what? I'm going to leave it up to the imagination of the listeners. Check it out. That's all I'm going to say.
Fair enough.
Kind of like an 11 o'clock comics ending, you know, in your travels, go check it out.
Well, hey, I mean, really, everybody when they go to the store should try to make a point of checking out something they haven't been reading.
Well, that's the thing. I was not going to pick this book up. I've heard it talked about a lot of times on a lot of different podcasts, and I picked it up, and I really enjoyed it. So, very cool stuff.
Cool. So what do you got coming up on your shows?
This week, for the last week in April, I'm going over the Eisner Awards and a couple of categories that pertain to collected editions, which are going to be kind of fun.
Cool.
The first Wednesday in May will be my free comic book day wrap-up, and that is one of my most downloaded shows of the year. And it's kind of strange because, I mean, I talk to artists and writers and editors, John, as you know, and this one it's really cool because I take what you get for free comic book day, right, and I tell you where you can get more information on that certain title in collected edition form.
I love it when you do those.
The entire list. It's a very long show. It runs about over an hour, but it's a lot of fun to do, and I learn a lot of things just in my research. And I think I got a lot of great feedback from it over the years, and it's a pretty cool show. I really like it a lot. And it's one of those shows, like our year-end show, where you don't have to listen to it in one straight shot. I recommend keeping it and saving it for a rainy day thing because you can always go back and reference that particular show.
Exactly, exactly.
What cool. about you? What's coming up for you?
Let's see. We've got Weekly Comics Spotlight. We just did Doc Savage, Black Widow, and Pantheon this week. Next week we're going to be doing Spirit Number 1, which I hope is better than Doc Savage Number 1.
You and Bob are so geek for that series, too.
I think both of us went into the Doc Savage thing after First Wave thinking, wow, this is going to be great. And we read it and we're like, what the hell were they thinking?
Yeah, did they just not get the right people for Doc Savage?
Not at all.
No.
This is one where a thousand monkeys and a typewriter might have been the better solution. I mean, the guy is not a bad writer. It just seemed choppy. It was not good Doc Savage. It was not a good comic or good Doc Savage.
Okay.
So, but coming up, we got Spirit, Guardians of the Galaxy, Magdalena. Then the next week we're going to do Garrison Number 1, Invincible Iron Man 25, Last Unicorn. We're going to have our previews teleconference on May 7th. We're going to do our previews episode that weekend, so the deadline for getting in clips will be the 7th. And of course, Chris, you're always welcome to send one in. But
yep.
I know you got a couple of shows going now, so I totally get...
I know.
I know how time-consuming podcasting can be, believe me.
So one thing about the Spirit, I'll say, I hung out with Will Pfeiffer in Chicago and at C2E2, and he has got a backup feature coming up in, I don't know if it's Spirit 3 or 4 or 5, one of those, one of the early issues of Spirit. So look for that. And Will, of course, did excellent work on Catwoman a few years ago, so I really like his work.
I will say the backup feature of Justice Inc. and Doc Savage was pretty good. So, but you can just listen to the episode we put up on that.
Definitely.
So, yeah, that's pretty much what we got going at the moment. We got the usual, you know, weekly spotlight and that kind of stuff, but nothing too exciting going on.
All right.
I guess that does it then.
Thank you.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath, logic, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.